delighted to have you in the podcast where all stories are welcome and the masks come off. Hi, Dhruv.
Hi, Shiva. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. It's such a pleasure to have you join me for a soul brew on Coffee and Soul. Thank you so much for making the time, Dhruv.
Thank you so much for inviting me, Shiva. It's a pleasure to be here for sure.
Lovely. I'm really delighted to have you here, Dhruv. It's been a while and it's so good to reconnect.
Yeah, same here after so many years. I mean, and isn't it like, you know, absolutely amazing that our paths crossed in Levi's so many years back and here we are reconnecting again.
That's right. It's awesome, you know.
Yeah, such interesting journeys.
Yeah. So do you have your cup of coffee ready with you?
Yes, I have, as you instructed, and I didn't have to be because I'm always sitting in office with this one. So cheers to that.
Yes, and here's to life. Life and living, Dhruv.
Absolutely.
Oh, yes.
No coffee, no life.
No coffee, no life. Correct. Absolutely.
Yes.
All right. Can I just ask you to hold that cup of coffee between your palms?
Okay.
And just sit back. Just sit back and relax.
Yes. It's nice and warm and it's
nice
cold
and
here in Delhi. As
yes,
you know.
Exactly.
Not as cold as it was in Manali a few days ago.
Oh, you were in Manali. Wow. Okay.
Yeah. I just decided to work there for a few days. The pollution in Delhi was so adverse.
Yeah.
So I was working there for about a week or so.
That must have been fabulous.
Amazing. Yeah. I was in this room all day, you know, taking meetings with -7 outside. but it was great.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you hold this cup of coffee in your hands, and can I ask you to close your eyes and sit back?
Yeah, okay.
And what comes up for you?
What comes up for me?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what tranquility. Tranquility and bliss.
Tranquility and bliss and what you're seeing?
Yeah, I'm pretty much at this moment in time in terms of what I'm feeling quite tranquil. With a cup of coffee in my hand and...
Yeah.
Having an intelligent conversation with someone like you, which is what I don't get all the time. So yes, it's good. Yeah, it's nice to connect and it's nice to be in the moment.
Absolutely.
I'm sure 1 hour later I'll be in some meeting and I won't be tranquil anymore.
Yeah,
it'll be probably stormy.
Yeah, with the kind of role that you have, Dhruv, absolutely. And that's possibly.
And I promised to tell my, I promised my team that I'll share this video with them. So they're going to be laughing when they hear this. We don't know, this bloke could be tranquil.
Yeah. No, it's, I hear you, tranquil and blissful. And I also noticed that lovely cup of coffee you're carrying.
I kind of really liked it. It kind of appealed to me with the reindeer, with the Christmas tree, with the fir trees.
Yeah, for the current season.
Yeah, you did
a pour over, did you not?
Yes. And my pour over is right here, as you can see.
Yeah.
The paraphernalia in office.
So where did you pick this up?
I picked it up during my cycling journey in the US. I mean, in Canada, of course, I met a lot of fellow cyclists.
Mm.
Who I was carrying a lot of green tea with me, or I'd buy it on the way. I was still a tea drinker.
Yeah.
Not so much of a... I used to drink black coffee once in a while, but not an avid coffee drinker. And then saw these guys making these concoctions early in the morning, you know, in the campground. A great ado and a lot of passion. And the coffee would really sort of energize them. And I did know that caffeine is great for cyclists.
Right.
So as I was touring through Alaska and Canada and the US and other countries in the cold, I realized that there was great coffee to be had here.
Yeah.
And once I entered Mexico, I had great coffee everywhere. I had all the famous Guatemalan, Nicaraguan, Central American coffees, and then the Colombian coffee. So I sort of savored all of them. I think I've become quite a coffee flavor expert now.
I can imagine, because you were there in the areas that grow these coffees, right?
Yes,
and so this brings me very nicely to my next question, Dhruv. What is this? What did you do, and what has been your journey? What led you to arrive at doing this expedition that you went on solo cycling the Americas?
Shiva, I mean, as you know, I've been in corporate life for almost since what 1992, 93, and had been almost 25 years at it. And I've kind of felt a little out of perspective and a loss of purpose sort of feeling used to come over me many often. And I used to wonder, what is the real purpose of my life, you know, and what should I be doing, and how do I need to pivot to a new way of life? And I'd also taken up cycling a few years ago in 2012. So, you know, one day I was just sort of glancing through a biking magazine that I used to subscribe to, and I saw this picture of this touring cyclist, you know, heading into the Bolivian plateaus at a very high altitude, obviously. And that picture was just stunning. And I could just experience the sense of freedom that he must have been feeling at that moment in time. And I said, this is what I need to feel, you know, the sense of open spaces and freedom and a life in the outdoors for an extended period to really discover who I really am and what I'm meant to do. So I think it was part, I would say, a search for a purpose, part burnout, part wanting to seek freedom. And I combined that with my passion for cycling, and I said, okay, let me explore a part of the world. At that point, when the idea got injected in my mind, I didn't even think that it would be a year and a half. I just thought maybe I'll just take a short trip for a couple of months and come back, or 3 weeks or 4 weeks. But what turned out was something very different. And this happened during a hiking trip in Alaska, which I took for about 10 days. And I just fell in love with that country, with that wilderness, with the remoteness of the place. I said, I've got to come back here. And then sure enough, I found myself mapping a route from Alaska down south to, I said, let me do North America. And then I said, why not the South of America as well? And then, you know, the dreams just got bolder and bolder, and said, why not the tip of the world? Start from the top and go to the bottommost part of the world, which is Ushuaia in Argentina. Right. So that was the original dream. And 2016, after a lot of planning, June 21st, I actually started out from a place called Dead Horse in Alaska, which is the northernmost point of the North American continent. It's where the road ends, actually.
I remember reading about it. Yes.
So no man's land. I flew there with my bicycle. And there is a small airport there because there's a massive oil field there. And the Americans use it to ferry oil rig workers. So, and people live in container homes over there. It's not really a city, it's just a town. It's a small community and township where all rig workers work, and they work on the platforms, so oil fields. So I lived there for 2-3 days, got myself acclimatized, and then started cycling south. So from the tip of North America down from Alaska into Canada, the remotest parts of the world you can think of.
Wow.
And then of course into a bit of civilization on the western coast of the US, and then back into a desert in Mexico and the mountains there. And Central America with all its rainforests and volcanoes and great culture and, you know, very colorful.
A year and a half on the road?
Yes, yes. A year and a half on the road with all my gear. And obviously I was carrying everything that I had to live with, whether it was my tent or my sleeping bag, pots and small pots and pans here and there, a couple of them, stove for cooking food, some clothes, that's it. So about 40 kilos of gear, approximately, all the water that you need to carry, also food. We're restocking on the way.
That's amazing. And so this year and a half, I mean, yes, of course, for physically arduous, I'm sure.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Yeah. What did it do for you? And you said that, you know, you're seeking freedom from. And that's kind of stayed in my mind right now when you said that. Did you find what you were seeking freedom from?
I mean, I found it in a different way. I discovered that I would be happy in the outdoors, number one. And number two, I discovered that there is a secret to the world that very few people stumble upon. And even if they do, nobody hears them, because it frightens them to think that they could be another world. So I'm going to try and explain it to you in this conversation. I think when I was there in the wilderness, in the Yukon and in Canada and in Alaska, and 2-3 days would go by when I would not even meet anyone or talk to anyone.
Yeah.
When you're cycling alone on the road and through forests, it's a bit like a Lord of the Rings kind of a scenario, if you can think of it like that.
I can, yeah.
You start imagining that there can be another world. I mean, and the world that's been created is basically some sort of a massive social experiment where everyone's living in cages in these cities. Mm-hmm. But we are actually born to be in nature, to be wild and to be living freely, mm-hmm. And not bound by the things that society expects us to do or structures for us from the day we are born.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so whether it's going to school or it's going to get a job after school or getting married, having children, and then getting old and dying. I think that's a process that's been laid out for centuries by humanity.
Mm.
But when you really look back into the way the indigenous tribes live in those regions, they still follow a lot of practices that they used to follow for centuries. Mm. Of course, they're all modern now. They don't dress all the time in their traditional wear, or they have modern careers and modern jobs, but in their heart, they still follow all the traditions and norms in their societies.
Mm.
And you find that they think very differently. They think about man, about man's relationship with nature all the time. Mm. And nature for them is, and the land and the earth is inseparable from their, you know, from their future and their livelihood. So that interconnectedness is missing completely in the world today. And my biggest discovery was that this is something which is such a important truth, but we tend to sort of shy away from it. And it's very important that we find a purpose somewhere in life where we detach ourselves a bit from all the things that we believe can give us happiness, because the real happiness and joy and freedom actually lies in embracing nature and being gentle towards it.
Absolutely, you know? And towards each other. I think what you just said, Dhruv, it's really like you touched the part of us which actually continues to be the hunter-gatherer, you know, the nomadic kind of.
Exactly. And Shiva, I used to feel like a hunter-gatherer, because all that I was obsessed with during the day was, where am I going to fill my water from, and what am I going to eat? My needs got down to two things, food and water, and finding a place to sleep at night. I stopped worrying about, you know, things that pull us down sometimes in our day-to-day lives. Of course, when you're on the road, you can't compare it to leading a normal life. You know, I mean, it's different.
Yeah.
But what I'm trying to say is that life, when it's down to basic needs, it can really become very simple. We complicate it because we want to surround ourselves with material things and with assets and acquiring them. And therefore, the acquisition of assets and material things becomes the main purpose of our life, though we may not admit it. But we're all in jobs, and we're all in doing things, being busy because we want to earn money and buy more things or make ourselves more comfortable. But what I realized living on two shirts, two pieces of underwear, three pairs of socks over the year and a half is that you need very little in life to survive. You know, I was living off the road, literally, and I was the happiest ever in my life. Not because I didn't have to work. I was working day in and day out. I was peddling furiously. I was planning, looking at maps, seeing where I have to sleep, you know, strategizing. It wasn't, you know, like a walk in the park, you know. It's hard work, you know.
Yeah, I just want to come in here and tell, you know, and completely resonate with what you're saying, because we in our societies tend to think of work as equal to pay. So that which pays is work, and otherwise it's not work, which is so true. You know, work in itself is neutral. It's work. Yes. Payment is something that, you know, go ahead, Dhruv. I'm totally.
Yeah, yeah. So it's difficult for anyone to fathom that. And and it's not easy. I mean, I myself came back, you know, to fulfill a certain quest for income, maybe, you know. But yes, ideally speaking, so I am, of course, there myself a little bit. But I haven't forgotten the lessons of the journey. I will go back and revisit those lessons and remind myself that I need to, you know, sort of imbibe that again. And I'm on that journey again, you know, so in my own small way, to try and see that those lessons are never lost.
Absolutely. And you've written another book, right?
Yes, it's called Away. Yeah. So I wrote Away during the lockdown. I think it was sometime in May.
Okay.
It's a collection of short stories, which is like a prequel to Grit, Grabber and Gear and a sequel to that.
Okay.
Grit, Grabber and Gear straddles in the middle, but it sort of aways about 6-7 adventure stories where I actually try to chronicle how I got into cycling and what all adventures led me to it. And then post my coming back, how I continued to go on those adventures in spite of the fact that I had a full-time job. So away is supposed to signify being away from a normal life, away finding your freedom.
Yeah.
You know, and we can, it was just written with a hope because everyone was caged in for so many months.
Yeah.
Especially in Delhi, we had a very harsh lockdown for a very long time. And I wrote it because I wanted to inspire people to say, okay, I can get away to the mountains. I can even bike, I can run, I can walk, I can hike. But I need to get away. And my job should not be an excuse not to do this for myself. So get away to find your freedom. That was the primary core message behind the book. It's a very short book. It's not very big.
I'd love to read it. I'm looking
for a big one like Grit, Gravel and Gear.
Grit, Gravel and Gear was big.
I took me a year to write it. This one I just finished in 30 days.
Yeah, right.
So, you know, so it's seven short stories of different adventures in the Himalayas.
Lovely.
And two in Alaska. So I'm trying to inspire people to sort of do their own thing and find their tune with nature, actually. That's really, really important.
That is so beautiful, Dhruv. As you continue to reflect on a journey, can you talk to me about some of your highs, your defining moments, some of your lows, whatever you can share? You know, you don't
have many highs and very few lows, actually. And my highs were, you know, basically the stunning landscapes in Alaska, in Canada, in Mexico.
So I'm coming in here, not necessarily of this journey. I mean, in life per se, not in your expedition.
Yeah, in life there have been so many. I mean, life has been like a mountain range, you know, up and down. You go up a mountain, you come down to the pass, then you climb all the way again. Yeah. So my journey has been, has not been smooth for me. It's been actually, it's a struggle. And I felt that challenges were constantly thrown at me. And I had to keep overcoming them. It was almost like playing a video game where then the levels keep increasing. It's not getting easier. Okay. And sometimes you fall with a thud and you get up again and you rise again. So I would possibly characterize my life as a life of having to fall and rise again and again and again. And I've become used to that rhythm now, Shiva. So, and it's fun. So when people ask me, what was your biggest learning from the journey? I say, just struggle. Just embrace struggle and hardship in life and you'll be fine. If you make friends with it, it's going to be okay. And you'll stop using the word struggle and hardship. You'll just see it as a part of life, you know. And that's the way I see it. And the journey became a metaphor for life itself because I would summit a mountain. My backside would be sore. My legs would be hurting. The sun would be really down, beating hard on me. And I would say, like, I can't go another range. But I still had to cross the mountain because I still had to get to a particular place where there would be water. Otherwise, I'd be stuck in the middle of the desert. So I had to climb the mountain, go down to the town, into the pass, beyond the pass in the valley, right? And then climb the next morning again, another mountain to go down to the town in the next valley. So, you know, this was like up and up and down. But it was happening on a daily basis where life does it to us over a period of time, you know, 20 years, 25 years, 30 years. So it's like a metaphor for life, you know, it's going to be up and down. It's been like that for me. And I guess it's like that for everyone.
Yeah.
Just that the scale of it varies from person to person.
Absolutely. And particularly if you think of yourself as living in an accelerated lifetime and you kind of, the growth is like a spiral, right? I mean, it may be up and down, but actually you're moving up without. So I think that's what I'm hearing. And I think that is really beautiful, Dhruv.
Yes. And Shiva, I've lived a very, very high-pressure job. You know, I've worked for many brands, I've launched many brands, and that's a high-pressure sales job.
Sure.
You know, whether it was with the Levi's itself, you know, launching Levi's, then launching Dockers. And then prior to that, you know, I launched Scotch-Brite and Post-it Notes in India. And then after that, I launched Disney for Weekender. And then again, I launched another brand after that. So, you know, I've been in this strange spot where I've been launching things and launching companies. And that's taken from a sales guy's perspective, took a lot of me, you know, from leading large teams and dealing in high pressure situations and leading a very stressful life all the time. So I think I found cycling as a great, and running and hiking as great, I would say, relievers of stress and sort of a way to reconnect back to myself and come back energized to, you know, my job and to my team, who would expect me to lead them with a certain amount of dexterity and strength and, you know, and certain sense of direction. So yeah, I mean, it's not been easy, both at the personal level and the professional level, but that's nothing unusual. A lot of us go through it.
Sure.
Almost everyone.
Yeah, I guess how you roll with the punches is how it happens.
Yes. You got to roll with the punch, take it, you know, fall down and get up again and keep punching
walking.
And keep getting punched back and keep punching back and getting on with it one match after the other.
Is there anything you feel you could have done differently, Dhruv, in your life? I don't mean it in terms of regrets. I'm just saying.
I think I should have sort of, when I came back from my journey, I should have. Okay, let me look at it and say it slightly differently. I think I should have sort of continued with my journey for some more time.
Okay.
It's not a regret, but it's something that was unfinished business. And I should have sort of found a way to be able to contribute more creatively and proactively to some of the things that I believed in. Okay, so one was climate change, the other was environment protection. The third was fighting for the rights of the indigenous people in the world. So these are all causes which are there in my mind, which I want to sort of devote my life to. And I feel that I should have spent more time getting into that and developing a greater understanding of those issues at a far deeper level than what it is today. And I'm sure I'll do it one day. But right now, it's something that it's not a regret. But it's something I would have liked to do differently. I would not have liked to come back immediately to the world that I'm in today. Maybe later. I could have done it later. I think it was a bit premature.
Was there some dissonance? Did you feel a lot of dissonance, or did you smoothly connect back? Dhruv, how was it for you?
Well, it was a massive dissonance because I felt it at the spiritual level, at the physical level, because I came back from Peru straight to Delhi. Pollution almost killed me. I think the first 6 months, dealing with Delhi by itself as a crowded city was still okay. I could deal with it. That was not a problem. I think it was the pollution that played havoc with my biological setup. And I had a massive issue settling back again. I couldn't breathe most nights. I had problems with that. I couldn't cycle for 3, 4 months, 5 months because I knew that if I went out, I'd develop some issue or the other because my lungs were just not prepared for that beating that they were getting. But then after 5 or 6 months, I guess they got used to the air once again, and then I was fine. But for the first 5, 6 months, it was pretty bad. So I turned that energy to writing the book, you know.
Right.
So
right.
I spent that time where I couldn't do much. I didn't have a job. Physically, I was not feeling that great because of the air and stuff like that. So I devoted all my energy to writing the book. I spent 6 months post coming back, writing it, finishing it, getting it edited, published. So that way, it was time well spent. But yes, the dissonance with life, a crowded city, and different attitudes and different culture all over again, including the diet, were very different. So I got used to a very oil-less, salt-less diet. You know, not bland.
Yeah, I understand.
But food is prepared differently in different parts of the world. So getting used to the spices and the oils again was a big challenge.
Yeah, and that's at the physical level. But I'm sure there were many other things that, like you said, the culture.
The spiritual level also, you know, it was very difficult to sort of... people wanted to know about the journey. But then when I would tell them stories like the way I'm telling you, some of them thought I was cuckoo. You know?
It's beyond reference points, though.
Beyond reference points, like you rightly said. And
yeah.
I don't sort of have a problem with that. It's just that I tried my best.
Of course.
But I cannot articulate the feeling of sleeping alone in a forest under 1,000-year-old trees.
Yeah,
you know,
I can imagine.
Till you don't do it yourself alone, you can't experience, you know, what you go through.
Awesome. Yeah. I mean, that's all I can say. It's no one can know it. No one can know it like you know it. You're totally right that, you know, you have to actually be there.
To go through the hallucinations you get, the dreams you get sleeping in ancient forests, it's everything that you read in and see in movies.
Really?
It's that true and it's that eerie.
Really?
It's just incredible.
You do get those kinds of...
Psychedelic dreams, strange dreams which you never get in a city ever. But you sleep in an ancient forest alone in the night. Oh my God.
Yeah.
The hallucinations you have, it's almost as if this forest has just entered your being and is talking to you. Oh, just incredible.
Wow, this is my goosebump moment with you.
Yeah.
Wow, that is amazing. Did you ever feel, one is of course the joy of it all, and you know, the of being alone with all this, and yet not alone, totally connected is what I'm hearing. But did you ever feel the lack of not having someone with you to share it? Did that ever come up? Well, most of your journey you were alone.
Most of my journey I was alone. I had cyclists who would join me for a week or so once in a while. But that also very, very less. Just 2-3 times it happened. Maybe there were a couple from Texas who were good friends, and now good friends now. And we met twice on the journey and just stuck to each other for about a couple of weeks each time. But beyond that, I had really had no company. So I was mostly alone, and I didn't sort of miss having anyone. I was happy. I was happy with my aloneness. And even from a practical point of view, a lot of the other cyclists who were on the road were experienced touring cyclists from Europe or from the Americas. They had been cycling for almost the entire life. Right. They were they were really good touring. They would move much faster than me. And I realized, and they were not the type who had the same passion for things like photography and historical culture that I was seeking. So our paths would never really follow the same route. Whereas my route would take me sometimes back into cities, into seeing museums and archaeological excavations and things like that, or the Maya or the Inca. Whereas many of them would just want to go into the villages. You know?
Right.
From me, from that perspective, I'm already from India. I know what villages look like, you know.
Correct.
I mean, you know, I know what that life is all about, and I experienced the same kind of villages there as well. But for me, of greater interest was the landscape photography, stopping, taking pictures, taking my time over a place, over a spot, which they would find, they would get impatient with. I knew they would. And the other part is, of course, you know, going into towns. A lot of touring cyclists don't like going into towns. I wanted to, because I wanted to experience the local museum, the local church, understand what people do and stuff like that. So our journeys would be very different. So I was quite happy being alone, because it gave me time and space to explore those countries in my own pace.
That's amazing. You've already talked to me about your metaphor for life, which is what you've lived through and what you shared. If I was to ask you now, Dhruv, some of the things that you talked about was about doing this to inspire others. So what is your unique legacy to humankind? And each one of us has something special to bring, which nobody else brings. And we add to the tapestry our own special thread. What is yours?
I'm not sure what my legacy is, but ever since I've come back, I've been trying a lot to convey a love for the outdoors, love for animals, a love for the indigenous people in the world through my book, through my writings, and through all the talks that I've given so far. When I left in 2016, there was barely anyone who was really touring on a bicycle in India. Today, I see hundreds of people who are buying equipment to go on tour on their own, shorter trips, maybe, you know, Kashmir to Kanyakumari or Bombay to Delhi, or, you know, those are still more road bike kind of trips. Many people are actually packing up their bikes and going and exploring the country, which was not the case 5 years back. So I think in some small way, I could have been instrumental in catalyzing through my posts and through the, you know, grapevine about what I'm doing. Many people would have found the courage to say it's possible and started doing that. And of course the others, so maybe somebody joined, and then that person inspired somebody else. So it became like a cascading effect, right?
Snowball.
So that's, I think that's one part. The second part is that, you know, I talk a lot about grit to people, especially at work, with other people as well, that how important the function of grit is in your life, how important it is to sort of be focused and very, very detail oriented in whatever you do. So that's the kind of, while we used to talk about it earlier, but now I have live examples to share with people and bring that credibility to the conversation at work. So I see that style of leadership kind of disseminating down to the other senior leaders in the organization, who to understand now the importance of micro leadership, of you know, going beyond their potential, what they believe is their potential. Their potential is much more, and they can do much more. Not just as professionals, but as people in their personal life, they can try to aspire for more.
Sure.
And yes, I think hundreds of people have been inspired to take up cycling after me.
You know, and it's so true.
And so many people have told me, Dhruv, I took up cycling because of you, and I feel so happy, you know. Boss, I just started cycling. A few girls also. Boss, I started cycling like, you know, 20 kilometers today. I did my first bike ride thanks to you. So I keep getting these messages from people on and off, and that's really heartwarming.
That's fabulous. You know, and I'm very, very inspired, Dhruv. I want to get onto that cycle. I've done a little bit of cycling, but not the way you have. And definitely not. I don't even know whether I ever will.
Do it when you're back in Pondicherry. Pondicherry to Chennai and back.
I know that. Yes, that is possible. But, you know, even here, one can pick up and look at who are the like-minded people and just pick up something.
Yeah, not the safest of places to cycle at the moment.
Not really.
The way it is.
Not really. Yeah.
It's hazardous air today.
I know. It's every, what do? We live
it's not safe.
Yeah. But having said that, you have been a source of inspiration for many. And I hope you continue to do that, Dhruv, because when you talk about the indigenous people, you look at the tribes. I mean, there is so much here in India itself, no? When you look at the tribes here, which are not included oftentimes into even a vocabulary around it.
No, they're not. And the word indigenous doesn't exist really in India.
Correct.
We use tribe, the word tribe, which is fine. But the issue is that their issues are not seen as live issues. I think a lot of people think that the tribals are backward people. They don't wear clothes. They live in jungles. They don't have a culture. They need to be educated. For example, I read an article on there's a residential boarding school somewhere in our country, I think it's in Odisha, where girls are sent to study from the Adivasi community. And, you know, the thing that I sort of struck me, which that article didn't strike me earlier, but when I came back, you see what happened in the 50s and 60s was the Canadian government took away children and put them into boarding schools, the indigenous tribes. You know?
Yes, the first people, and, right? Yeah.
The First Nations people. Mm. And those they sort of couldn't even choose their name.
Mm.
They were given English names. They were given an English education, Western style education. They were given Western clothes to wear.
Mm.
They lost touch with their language. The language is not a written language.
Mm.
So it was a spoken language. So when they came back, they didn't know their language at all. So as a result, there's been a whole generation of First Nations people in the middle who don't know the language, don't know the culture, don't know the tradition. And you see the same thing happening in our country where in the name of education and progress, we are taking away ancient knowledge and ancient cultures and customs and traditions away from those people and forcing them to wear a westernized uniform clothing in school and class, where they forget to even wear what they were wearing.
Absolutely.
Back in the villages, you know, they lose the original costume, their original traditional dresses, which is a pity because it's so much a part of the fabric of humankind. You know, it's you will lose the soul and a sense of mankind.
Absolutely.
If you cut away the bridge we have to our ancestors, you know, we'll be a soulless planet.
Exactly. And there is so much work to be done in this area, so much in terms of bringing it to awareness, getting tribes around it, you know, tribes around it to be able to talk.
You know, there are forestry issues, there are land issues. Yeah. People think we're giving education and westernizing them, you're giving them progress. It's not that. You can have a balance of both.
Exactly.
You can educate and you can help people design programs to keep them deep-rooted in their customs and traditions, at least some of them. And who are we to say what is backward and what is progressive? I mean,
exactly.
We can't be judgmental about it.
Exactly. So what else? What else would you like to say? You know, we are coming pretty much to the close of our conversation. And what else?
I think it's just all I want to say is, and you know, to anyone who's hearing this program or seeing it, is that find your freedom. I think find your space to recreate yourself and really be who you are. And perhaps it's scary. It's a scary journey. But once you get past the first step and the second step, the steps after that on your journey are fairly easy. And they come, the universe opens up for you and gives you all the guidance you need to be on that journey. So find your purpose, find your And the purpose can keep changing, but find your purpose, find your freedom. I would say spend more time with nature and protect it and be gentle with it, and find a voice to talk about it. Even if you can't do much about it politically, or, you know, you don't have to go for a mass protest if you don't feel comfortable, but can you please talk about it and put pressure through various social media to bring awareness about love for animals, love for nature, and, you know, try and be a softer, gentler human being.
Lovely. Thank you so much, Dhruv. It's been an absolute delight to talk to you. And
thank you, Shiva.
You know, just spend this time together.
It's been absolutely wonderful speaking to you. Thank you for all your wonderful questions, because sometimes the questions make all the difference.
It's my pleasure. It totally has been. And all the very best as you journey
thank
on
you.
With
thank
all
you,
the Shiva. Things that you want to continue to do.
Thank you. I wish you the same.
Thank you, sir.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, and I hope 2021 is fabulous for you and for all of us now.
2020 was fabulous. It depends how you look at it. I learned so much out of this crisis.
Yeah.
It shows up things about you that you didn't know existed. So
that's so true.
All of us. So yes, we have a lot to be grateful to the universe for.
And survived. On that note, yes, and we survived, and how, with what spirit? I think that is amazing.
Yes, correct. Absolutely.
You take care, Dhruv.
Thank you, Shiva. All the best.
Thank you for your time and attention, and for being a part of Soul Brews with Shiva. Until next week, keep the coffee swirling.